All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world, and happy Monday, everybody. Today's April 20th, 2026. Happy April 20th to those who celebrate. And our top story this morning is Schrodinger's Strait of Hormuz. It remains both open and closed at the same time, at least based on presidential tweets and bullets and missiles. Over the weekend, we had an abrupt change in the pattern of rosy headlines about, oh yeah, the strait is going to be open and all the oil is going to be flowing and we've reopened the strait and the markets rip. And then, well, Saturday, the Iranians fired at two ships. Whoops. I thought you said we were in the tree, in the nest. What happened here? Well, this container ship, an Indian container ship, was transiting the strait. And all of a sudden, the recordings were going around on Twitter. The captain is on the radio saying, IRGC, IRGC, why are you shooting at me? I have your approval to transit the strait. I'm second on your list. Let me turn around. And apparently another boat was hit by a projectile. I'm guessing that was a drone. Look, there was all kinds of conflicting headlines about the strait is open or not. It kind of makes you wonder, there's been such a decapitation strike in Iran. Are the people we're currently negotiating with even capable of delivering what they negotiate for? Well, then a day later, following up on that, on Sunday, this is yesterday now, the U.S. fired on an Iranian ship. This was a cargo container ship that was trying to get into the strait. Now, that ship had left originally from ports in China. So I wonder if they're going to find anything on that boat. After several hours of warnings, the U.S. came over the radio and said, basically, get everybody out of your engine room. We're about to blow up your engines. This destroyer opened up with its deck gun, took out the engine room. Marines boarded and seized the ship. So obviously, the strait is not open, even though the market rallied 13 consecutive days on that farce that the strait was open and the ceasefire. The ceasefire is supposedly over tomorrow, would mark the 2 weeks since the ceasefire went into effect. Are we going to have another 2 week kicking the can down the road, or are we just going to start shooting again? Who knows? We've been here before, right? We get all these great headlines during the week, and then over the weekend, the fighting starts up again, or something breaks down, talks break down. Monday, all hell's about to break loose again, and then all of a sudden, we get another 2 week delay or another 90-day extension of the tariffs, or who knows what. So it's pretty hard to trade on these headlines right now. Now, also going on this morning, this story out of the UAE, the Emiratis want a Fed swap line. That's interesting. Now, the UAE obviously gets most of its money from oil. The oil is not flowing, so they find themselves short dollars in the UAE. And they're saying, in order to defend our currency, we want to be able to trade our currency for dollars outside of the Forex market via swap lines directly between the central banks. And the UAE is saying, if we don't get that, we might be forced to trade our oil in yuan. Oh, you better believe that's a serious issue. That is a serious threat. All right. Threatening the petrodollar, wars have been fought over less. So I don't know. The Fed seems reluctant to provide this swap line. Maybe the Treasury will do it. But coincidentally, as the UAE is threatening the petrodollar, threatening to do, you know, hey, here's the stick, if you will. We got a carrot over the weekend. Daniel Kinahan was arrested in Dubai. Now, if you've been following this channel since 2024, you probably know a little bit about Daniel Kinahan. He's the Irish gangster, the head of the biggest drug cartel in Europe, and he's also a money launderer for Hezbollah and the IRGC. He's the guy who helps the Iranians sell their oil on the black market and fund their terrorist operations all over the world. Well, he's been hiding, air quotes, in Dubai for years. He hasn't been hiding. He's been living a flamboyant life out in the open. Well, he was just arrested on an Irish warrant. So possibly some kind of a deal being made here involving those swap lines and the arrest of this drug kingpin and money launderer that has been wanted by the U.S. and European authorities for years. Or maybe the Emirates just said, you know what? These drones are landing on our head now, and maybe we're not so keen on sheltering a known financier of terrorism, considering that terrorism is now targeting us. Maybe that changed their outlook on things. Either way, Daniel Kinahan is in custody this morning. Also, the U.S. renewed their waiver on the Russian oil sanctions. That expired last week. It was very quietly renewed after pressure from Asian countries. So you're allowed to buy that Russian oil without violating the sanctions again. Now, the other really big story that's going on this morning, and it's kind of flying below the radar right now, there has been a $13 billion bank run in decentralized finance in the crypto world. Right now, this isn't a huge story, but I think this is going to become a huge story pretty quickly. So what happened over the weekend is the Kelp DAO was hacked. That's this decentralized autonomous organization called Kelp. They were hacked and attackers stole about $292 million worth of restaked ETH. Don't ask me what restaked ETH is. I hate these shit coins. All right. But they were able to steal $292 million of this restaked ETH. And then they used that as collateral to go on the platform Aave and borrow $200 million. Now, that's a big deal because that leaves the $200 million hole in Aave's books. And the people who have their money locked up on Aave said, oh, we're now a little bit worried about your solvency. I'm going to go ahead and pull my deposits. I'm using the word deposit and bank run here. These aren't banks, these DeFi platforms, but they function essentially like a bank. They're not regulated like a bank. Their lawyers will be like, no, we're not a bank. It's a bank. It's the way they work, right? They take deposits and they make loans. It's what a bank does. Well, since that $200 million loss on the Aave platform, we have seen more than half of their TVL or total value locked. That's the acronym they use instead of saying deposits. More than half of Aave's liquidity total deposits have been drained from that platform as people don't want to be left there if they go under from this $200 million that was stolen. It was about $9 billion was pulled off of Aave, about $13 billion pulled off of the DeFi industry as a whole. Pay attention to that one, guys. You know, Bitcoin has been like kind of just whistling past the graveyard in the mid-70s. It's had a really good couple of days. There's some pretty bad things happening in the crypto world. Also, to my metal guys that are out there, China's silver imports hit a record in March. This is interesting. After selling off big time in January, the silver price obviously plunged from 120 down into the 60s. We've had 836 tons of silver was imported into China. That's just for the month of March, and that's versus a historical average of about 300 tons a month. So the Chinese more than doubled their silver imports. 836 tons, that's about 24.3 million troy ounces. Chinese have bought a lot of silver over the last few weeks. We've got South Korea possibly facing a syringe shortage. That's a weird headline today, and it's all stemming from the Middle East and a little bit of the, like, the psychology of the toilet paper shortages during COVID. That kind of stuff is coming back. All these weird supply disruptions that are happening stemming from the conflict in the Middle East. And last but not least, we've got consumer confidence. The University of Michigan Consumer Confidence Survey came out last week, and it was not great, Bob. And by not great, I mean 47.6, the lowest it's ever been in its nearly 80-year history. American consumers are not doing good. They are not happy. The gasoline prices are being felt. And, you know, it's worth pointing out that our GDP is almost a little more than two-thirds consumption, and the consumer is doing worse than he's ever done. Meanwhile, stocks making new highs all day. Oh, I'm sure this is just a wonderful mix. It's going to work out great. You're going to love it. Guys, why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. Hey, don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this every morning. Right now, the S&P is negative, but just barely 21 points, 0.3% lower on all these missiles and bullets flying in the Strait of Hormuz. And, we rallied thousands of points on the ceasefire that is no longer ceasing fire. And yet stocks are down 22 points this morning. The Dow off a paltry 150 points. Are we going to close green today? It looks like it. 0.3% lower. The NASDAQ is lower by a little bit bigger. Here's 63 points in the red, or still only a quarter of a percent down. Stocks are holding up really well, all things considered. Meanwhile, the dollar is a little bit stronger here, higher by 11 basis points at 98.20. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields just barely higher here. The 30-year Treasury is up by a fraction of 4.887%. The 10-year yield is up 1 point here at 4.254%. The 2 years at 3.721, that's up 2 basis points. and the 1 month is at 3.665, higher by half a point. All right, let's look at Bitcoin and what's going on in crypto. Right now, Bitcoin's having a good morning, $75,156. Bitcoin did not fare too well over the weekend. You see, we had two red candles Saturday and Sunday between the breakdown and the ceasefire talks, the missiles flying in the Strait of Hormuz, and that big hack on Aave. Let's talk about that hack on Aave here. All right, so this is in CoinDesk, dated just this morning. The $13 billion DeFi wipeout in 2 days, and it started with Kelp DAO attack. Somebody let me know in the comments, what the heck is a Kelp DAO? But I digress. Multiple lending and yield protocols are posting double-digit percentage declines in TVL. That's total value locked. When you hear TVL, think deposits at the bank. So double-digit declines in deposits, though token prices are seeing a limited decline. The decentralized finance ecosystem is experiencing a sharp capital outflow, otherwise known as a bank run, following the weekend exploit of the Kelp DAO protocol. Leading DeFi lending platform Aave has lost $8.45 billion in deposits in the past 48 hours, driving a broader $13.21 billion decline in total value locked across DeFi. TVL refers to combined dollar value of crypto assets deposited across DeFi protocols such as Aave, which Aave is the biggest in the space, and is widely used to measure liquidity and overall market activity. Total value locked across DeFi fell from $99.497 billion to $86.286 billion, while Aave's TVL declined by $8.5 billion from $17.9 billion. So more than half of all of the money deposited on Aave was withdrawn in a panic over the last 2 days. That is a bank run, folks. Protocol level data shows double-digit percentage drops across platforms, including Euler, Centura, and Aave, with losses concentrating in lending, restaking, and yield strategies tied to affected collateral. The move stems from a $292 million exploit of Kelp's bridge that allowed attackers to use stolen restaked ETH as a liquid restaking token widely used in DeFi as collateral to borrow funds on lending platforms. I'll be honest with you guys, I don't know what half of that shit means. All right, the DeFi space, I don't touch it with a 10-foot pole. I've never trusted it. I think the rewards they offer you are too high, and I think they lie about the risks, which some people are learning about those risks today. Because these stolen tokens lack legitimate collateral backing, borrowing against them created potential shortfalls for lenders. It's similar to conning a traditional bank by depositing fake fiat and then taking out loans against it, ultimately leaving the lender with the bad debt. Protocol responded by freezing affected markets while panicked users withdrew funds, leading to a broad decline in total value locked. So again, Bitcoin's having a good morning here. The crypto space is kind of ignoring that. Between this and what's going on in World Liberty Financial right now, guys, I think the next big leg down in Bitcoin is probably just around the corner here. Somebody's about to blow up. Looking over at the commodities board this morning, we've got gold and, well, metals not looking so good here. Gold, spot gold is down $11, $4,818. All things considered, holding up pretty well this morning. June COMEX gold futures are at $48.39, lower by about $40. Spot silver is at $80.19, lower by 61 cents or 0.75%. May COMEX silver futures are at $80.30, down by $1.57 or about 2% lower. Yeah, we're lower this morning, but I still like this shiny. Copper is down by about 1%. Platinum, 2.25% lower. Palladium, 2.2% lower. WTI is higher here, but just barely. $86.12 for June WTI futures. Higher by $3.53 or 4.3%. Oil fell like $12 last week, or almost $20 combined over the last couple of days. Oil has fallen. And then we get all this shooting over the weekend that proves all this ceasefire talk was baloney. And oil rallies a paltry $3. It's pretty crazy what we're seeing here. Here's the price chart for oil, $86.27. Again, look at the big declines we saw. We went from a high of $117 a few weeks ago, I should say. Let's set this to daily candles here. Be a little more accurate. Yeah, we were at $117 on the 7th of April, and we had all this optimism. Oil price falls. We hit a low of $78 on Friday. Now here we are, $87, when it turns out it's all malarkey. All right, but first we got to talk about silver a little bit more. China's silver imports jumped to record on retail and solar demand. This one's for my stackers out there. China's imports of silver surged to an all-time high in March as demand from retail investors and the country's massive solar industry pushed purchases well above the seasonal average. The world's biggest silver consumer imported around 836 tons last month, extending a strong run of inbound shipments so far this year, according to Chinese customs data on Monday. That compares with a 10-year seasonal average for March of about 306 tons. And you can see on this chart here, here's the prior 10 years. They're kind of light, but you can see them down in the middle. And then all of a sudden, we had that big decline in the price of silver in January. People bought the dip in February, and they really bought the dip in March. Silver imports exploding in China. Strong demand pushed Chinese prices well above international benchmarks, prompting traders to ship silver from all over the world to cash in on the arbitrage opportunity. Much of the metal flowed through Hong Kong. Now, I don't know how much of this is silver. They're saying that there was some expiring government subsidies for solar panels that may have caused some manufacturers to rush in some silver ahead of those expirations. And of course, obviously, prices in Chinese silver went cuckoo a couple of times there. The Chinese silver market has been trading at a substantial premium. So it's also likely that a lot of investment demand bought that metal in from other countries because, you know, you can make a few dollars an ounce just by moving your metal from the U.S. or London into China. Silver price, though, still kind of down where we've been for the last couple of months, $80 here after that big, big decline in January, which is what triggered that Chinese buying spree that kicked into overdrive in March. All right, let's talk about what's going on in the Strait here. This one from Saturday, Iran fires on container ship and tanker and cruise ship saying Hormuz is closed. There were a couple of cruise ships that skirted through the Strait of Hormuz over the weekend. They went, I guess the cruise ships are able to go into shallower water. They were hugging the southern end of the Strait near Oman. Iranian officials on Saturday reversed the previous statements and once again declared the Strait of Hormuz is closed, along with renewing their strict conditions. Several ships are reporting they were fired upon, while others said they were told the strait is closed and were forced to turn back from their attempts to exit the Persian Gulf. The monitoring operation UKMTO has received reports of a series of incidents taking place on Saturday in the Strait of Hormuz. An unidentified container ship reported that it was struck by a projectile while it was sailing 25 nautical miles northeast of Oman in the strait. The report says that containers were damaged, but there was no fire and the crew was not injured. The incident happened after an unidentified tanker also reported that it had been attacked. Two IRGC gunboats approached the tanker and opened fire with no VHF contact or challenge. The crew and vessel reported no damage. Iranian officials accused the United States of violations of the ceasefire and negotiations. Yesterday, Iran said the strait would be open to all traffic for the remainder of the ceasefire. Today, they announced that because the United States continues to blockade its ships and ports, the strait will be immediately closed. You know, kind of wonder, who are we actually negotiating with in Iran? And are the people we're negotiating with capable of delivering what they claim? Or is the IRGC really in charge? They're doing whatever the hell they want. And the Ayatollah and the president and the premier and the foreign minister are all just puppets of the radicals at this point. Well, the U.S. answered in kind because yesterday the U.S. struck and seized the Iranian flagged ship Tuska in the Gulf of Oman. A U.S. Navy guided missile destroyer fired on and disabled an Iranian flagged cargo ship in the Gulf of Oman before Marines boarded and seized the vessel, President Trump said on Sunday. Trump said that the USS Spruance intercepted the Iranian ship, the Tuska, and gave them fair warning to stop. Those warnings went on for several hours before they eventually fired on the ship. The Iranian crew refused to listen, so our Navy ship stopped them right in their tracks by blowing a hole in the engine room, Trump said on Truth Social Post. Right now, U.S. Marines have custody of the vessel, the president said. He noted that the Tuska is under U.S. Treasury sanctions due to its prior history of illegal activity. So we've got tit for tat, ship for ship going on in the Strait of Hormuz. Meanwhile, the Emiratis are getting a little froggy around the currency here. UAE asks U.S. about a wartime financial lifeline. Emirati officials speak with Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent about accessing dollars if Middle East conflict drags on. The United Arab Emirates has opened talks with the U.S. about obtaining a financial backstop in case the Iran war plunges the oil-rich Persian Gulf state into deeper crisis, U.S. officials said. UAE Central Bank Governor Khalid Mohammed Balama raised the idea of a currency swap line with Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent and Treasury and Federal Reserve officials in meetings in Washington last week. The officials said the Emiratis emphasized that they had so far avoided the worst economic effects of the conflict, but might still need a financial lifeline, the officials said. The talks highlighted the UAE's concern that the war could inflict major damage on its economy and its position as a global financial hub, depleting its foreign reserves and scaring away investors who once saw it as a stable and secure place for their money. Emirati officials haven't made a formal request for a swap line, which would give the UAE central bank inexpensive access to dollars to support its currency or shore up its foreign reserves in case of a liquidity crisis. In talks with the U.S. in recent days, they have portrayed the proposal as preliminary and precautionary, the U.S. officials said. But they've also argued that it was President Trump's decision to attack Iran that entangled their country in a destructive conflict whose effects may not be over, some of the officials said. Emirati officials told the U.S. officials that if the UAE runs short of dollars, it may be forced to use Chinese yuan or other countries' currencies for oil sales and other transactions, some of the officials said. So, yeah, that's a boy, it'd be a shame if we had to trade our oil for yuan and, you know, threaten your currency's dominance as the world reserve currency. You better believe the U.S. took that seriously. And that scenario is an implicit threat to the U.S. dollar, which reigns supreme among global currencies, partially because of its near exclusive use in oil transactions. Coincidentally, as the UAE is asking, and it's a big ask, for a swap line for their central bank, suddenly they're not interested in harboring a known financier of terrorism. That's interesting. Cartel boss Daniel Kinahan arrested in Dubai. Kinahan's cartel wars with rivals have been linked to at least 20 murders across four European countries, according to Europol. This one is in the International Consortium of Independent Journalists this morning. There's Daniel Kinahan. International drug kingpin Daniel Kinahan has been arrested in the UAE, the government of Dubai announced today. Kinahan is leader of the Kinahan cartel, which has been involved in cocaine and heroin trafficking and linked to at least 20 murders across Europe. His detention came after an Irish court issued an arrest warrant tied to his alleged role in an international organized crime network. Kinahan was arrested on April 15th under terms of an extradition agreement between Ireland and the UAE. Irish police said in a statement that the arrest is another extremely important demonstration of the need for international law enforcement cooperation in tackling transnational organized crime. Kinahan, who's in his 40s, moved to Dubai after he was the target of an infamous 2016 assassination attempt at Dublin's Regency Hotel. His presence in Dubai had long allowed him to evade U.S. and European law enforcement. He and his wife, Quiva, apparently that's how you pronounce that, Quiva Robinson, built a multi-million dollar property portfolio in the Gulf Emirate, ICIJ reported in 2024. They maintained some of these properties, which included a sprawling villa, even after Kinahan was hit with U.S. sanctions in 2022 for drug smuggling and money laundering. And the reason why I bring up Daniel Kinahan, this guy here, you may recall, those who've been following the channel for a while, 2 years ago, more than 2 years ago now, I put out this video about Hyperscale Nexus, which was Daniel Kinahan's fake AI money laundering front that he started. And yeah, this was basically tied to his empire. 2 days after I put out this video back in 2024, even though nobody cared, by the way, this story got zero media attention, no coverage anywhere, even though it was a billion-dollar cartel money laundering front for NVIDIA chips, smuggling them into China. 2 days after I released this video, the name Hyperscale Nexus disappeared into oblivion and they canceled their planned merger with the American Cannabis Corporation. By the way, I'll put a link to this video down in the description below if you want to check that one out. You know, it turns out Iranian drones landing on their heads convinced the people in Dubai that maybe it's not such a good idea to harbor the guy who allows the illegal oil sales that fund those very drones. Suddenly, they're more willing to turn the guy over. Or maybe they just really want that swap line. And so here's this cartel kingpin you've been hunting for years. Now give me my dollars. Also, as this is going on, U.S. renews Russian oil waiver after pressure from countries dealing with Iran war price shocks. This story got very little coverage over the weekend. That waiver of Russian oil sanctions had expired on Friday, and then very quietly they put them back in place. They extended them again after pressure from Asian countries, which are still scrambling to get their hands on energy any way they can. And that energy shortage is resulting in some pretty odd headlines. Take this one, for example. South Korea targets syringe hoarding as war rattles supply. Who had syringe hoarding on their 2020s bingo card? South Korea's health regulators are stepping in to curb syringe hoarding as supply chain disruptions tied to the Middle East conflict threaten the availability of essential medical supplies. While overall syringe production remains steady at about 4.5 million units a day, slightly above 2025 averages, hospitals report dwindling inventories and online platforms show rising prices and empty virtual shelves, according to the Ministry of Food and Drug Safety. Syringes are the latest everyday item in South Korea to be hit by spillover from the Iran war, which has disrupted supplies of naphtha, a petroleum derivative used in plastics manufacturing. Products such as syringes and intravenous fluid bags rely on polypropylene and polyethylene, both derived from naphtha. We've seen a surge in speculative demand as hospitals and clinics are preemptively ordering extra stock in anticipation of price hikes, which is creating artificial bottlenecks, said a spokesman, Young Chul Woo of the Korean Medical Device Association, which represents more than 700 suppliers. So it's basically the toilet paper panic buying from COVID. There never really was a shortage of toilet paper. Everybody just thought there was going to be. And so they went out and bought way more than they needed. And then all of a sudden there was. It was a self-fulfilling prophecy. And it looks like that's what's going on with syringes here. Even though production has not been disrupted, you've got a couple of people are worried that they won't be able to get the plastic they need to make them. And so they're just increasing their buying, hoarding them. Well, now you do have a shortage. Now there's empty shelves. So syringes in South Korea are in short supply because of the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. And last but not least, consumer sentiment in the United States. To put it bluntly, guys, it sucks. It's the worst it's ever been. According to the United States Michigan Consumer Sentiment, the sentiment index plummeted 11% to a historic low of 47.6 in early April 2026, far below both market expectations of 52 and last year's level by 9%. And again, 47.6, this is the lowest it has ever been in the nearly 80-year history of this survey. Nearly all surveys, 98% of them, were conducted before the temporary ceasefire announcement, underscoring the Iran conflict's immediate impact on confidence. All right, so that's important, all right? Before all this relentless positivity about the ceasefire took stocks to new all-time highs, that's when they did this survey. So it's probable that the number would be higher if they ran the survey today, but it was really bad. Sentiment declined across all demographics as well as every index component, signaling a broad-based drop. One-year business condition expectations crashed 20%, while assessments of personal finances fell 11%, with consumers citing rising prices and shrinking asset values as key concerns. Well, those asset prices are certainly not shrinking anymore. The stocks have gone up in a straight line since this survey was done. Buying conditions for durables and vehicles deteriorated further, again due to high costs linked to the war. Year-ahead inflation expectations spiked to 4.8% from 3.8% in March, the largest one-month drop since April of 2025. That was shortly after the tariff announcement. The Liberation Day caused a little bit of inflation phobia, while long-term inflation expectations rose to 3.4%, the highest since November of 2025. Not good, Bob. Not great, Bob. That really sucks, 47.6. The furthest back I can go is 10 years here. You can see this is the lowest we've been in 10 years. Even at the height of COVID, we only went as low as 50 in consumer sentiment. And again, going all the way back to the end of World War II, we've never been lower than the 47.6% decline that we just saw. Not looking good for the consumer, but luckily consumption is only about two-thirds of our economy or two-thirds of our GDP. So that's not really good news, is it? Well, anyway, hey, I just want to say thanks, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Thank you very much. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the algorithm, should you feel so inclined. Thank you very much to my Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee supporters. Links down below, along with the link to that Hyperscale Nexus video, if you want to see that one. Get some popcorn for that one. It's an oldie, but a goodie. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.